is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSIN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, how are we doing here on this Saturday morning? It's our last NFL regular season Saturday. We'll get some playoff Saturdays, but for the regular season, this is it, man.
I know. It's going to be hard, but at least we've got good. This is one of the best weekends. We've got good football, hopefully, better than what we saw last night in Missouri, Ohio State, the punt fest. But for the most part, you know, we're going to have good football, and we got a great game tonight, I think, at Dallas and Detroit. So that certainly will kick it off, and a ton of games tomorrow. I mean, four-game Femi is going to be busy tomorrow now. I mean, four-game Femi is going to be working at a high. You might have to go to five-game Femi. You might have to. I mean, there's so many games tomorrow.
I don't know how we're going to do it. I was looking at the slate, and I was telling our producer, Elliot, about this yesterday. We have 10 games in the early window tomorrow, and then three in the afternoon. So it's like they're putting me up against it in the early window with 10 of these games. So I don't – we're going to have to
figure it out. I mean, are you counting – let's go through it for a second. Are you counting Carolina-Jacksonville as a game you want on the board? No. Are you going to watch San Francisco? Are you going to watch the Ron Rivera-Washington Commanders? I mean, are you doing that one?
Well, I laid it with the Niners, so maybe I'll watch it.
Well, I mean, it's a smart play. Brissett's got the hamstring. He might not play, so okay. I mean, like, there's some decisions you got to make. I mean, obviously, the Miami-Baltimore game's got to be in a big screen, right?
Yeah, that's getting the volume, for sure.
And I got to put the Vegas Colt game on a big screen, so I'm watching those two. And then whatever other three I filter in, then becomes the game. But I have no interest in – I don't think I really even want to watch – any of the other ones. I mean, some of them are so bad. Giants-Ram game interests me, but, yeah. You know, there's no way you're getting me to turn on Carolina, Jack. I'll watch it on a replay. Even Tennessee-Houston. How about Atlanta-Chicago? Are you excited for that one?
Oh, God, no. No, I don't want to watch that one. It's like, just give me the updates. We'll watch it afterwards. But we don't need to watch that in real time. We don't need to do that one in real time. I mean, New Orleans and Tampa, that's interesting. Tampa has a chance to clinch the division. We'll see if New Orleans, they're still kind of in the NFC playoff race. So maybe that's one that'll make the screen there.
But. I mean, we'll have to check with Will Hill on this because he handles most of the scheduling throughout the country on all sports. But I wonder why we only have 3-4 o'clock starts. So like, why did they push a couple of these into the 4 o'clock window to at least give us a chance to watch them all?
The reasoning, I think, behind it was that, like, when they made the schedule, they obviously, like, thought Cincinnati, Kansas City was going to be Burrow versus Mahomes. And I think they wanted, like, CBS wanted that as, like, almost like a standalone kind of deal. Like, they're like, all right, like, you can put two other games, but we want, like, this to be, like, the national game. And unfortunately, of course, Burrow out for the rest of the season. So we get Browning versus Mahomes. And even the Chiefs, they're not even that fun to watch anymore the way they're playing. So it's kind of a bad beat for the schedule makers with Bengals Chiefs being sort of like the national game, even though nobody really wants to watch those teams based on how they're playing as of late here. But, I mean, we'll obviously get into all the NFL stuff coming up here. We have four fantastic guests on the show starting in 15 minutes. Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, he'll join us. Tim will give us his plays and his thoughts for this weekend's college football bowl games. The playoff is here on Monday. Can't wait for that one. My Washington Huskies taking on Texas. That'll be a lot of fun. Then in 30 minutes, Stormy Bonantoni, the host here of the Lombardi Line, Sunday through Thursday. She will join us here. She's doing the Fiesta Bowl, so she's already down there in the Valley of the Sun, the desert in the Phoenix area. So we'll get to Stormy's thoughts on the Fiesta Bowl, also her thoughts on the CFP and the other bowl games as well. Then 45 minutes from now, Jordan Schultz, NFL insider over at Bleacher Report. He was the one that broke all the details about Russell Wilson and the Broncos. We'll get Jordan Schultz's thoughts on that fiasco and whatever else is going on in the NFL. Then in the second hour, 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, Matt Eumanns, host of VSiN Tonight and the College Football Betting Podcast, will join us in his usual spot in studio as we get Matt Eumanns' thoughts on college football and the NFL.
And stick around for that. I mean, because, look, I don't think there's a hotter pick a handicapper right now in the country than Matty Eumanns. I don't think there is one. What, he's 6-0 with his VSiN picks last week. He's 13-1-1 in the contest, the Circa contest that he's over the last 3 weeks. I mean, you know, he's in second place. He's able to get some of Derek Stevens' money there. So it's pretty impressive considering that in his own contest, the one that he hurts, the Circa Invitational, he kind of got pushed out of that one. He's one loss record. I mean, that's what, down to five or six players now?
Yeah.
I mean, the last year's winner, Chris Felica, he's still in the tournament. So this is going to go down to the wire. But Matty's on fire. I mean, you want to listen to what he's got to say on these games because I think he's seeing the board pretty clearly.
Yeah, he's on a heater. So we'll have him coming up in hour number two. Make sure you stick around for that, like Michael mentioned here. But before we get into tonight's game, last night we saw college football. And, like, this week has been some of the bigger bowl games are starting to take shape here. Alamo Bowl was on Thursday. Last night we saw the Cotton Bowl. Missouri, shout out to our producer Elliot. MIZ, they went ahead and beat Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. Any thoughts from the last couple days of college football that we've seen here? I mean, the bigger bowl games start coming up later on this weekend and on Monday. But last couple nights we've had some interesting ones, at least, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, look, Missouri's defense was outstanding, you know, and obviously Devin Brown getting hurt in the game. I don't know how good, you know, I know he's a five-star. That's all you hear. He's a five-star. Oklahoma had a five-star. You know, they turned the ball over six times against Arizona. So, you know, I kind of feel like with all the opt-out, we're not getting great games. You know, yeah. I get Marvin Harrison not playing. Look, I don't argue with that. I really don't. It's not a championship game. He's got bigger fish to fry in terms of his down-the-road career. Understandable. But to me, I was expecting a little better quality play, especially from Ohio State. You know, I know their defense was really good. They were dominating the game for three quarters, and their offense just couldn't generate. I mean, where's the magic in Ryan Day here, Femi? I mean, where is their offense? I thought they literally could have lined up in two tight ends and just run the ball down the field.
Yeah, it was bad offensively from the Buckeyes. And you mentioned Harrison opting out. I think he was like the only one that opted out for Ohio State. They still had Travion Henderson, the running back. He played in the game. Emeka Abuka, he played in the game. Like, they still had guys out there. It wasn't like everybody decided to sit the game out to where, like, if you got those guys minus Harrison, you would expect more than 3 points, especially when it's an indoor setting here in a bowl game. You have so much time to prepare, and 3 points is all you got to show for it?
Yeah, I mean, look, and Missouri, look, we know Missouri's defense is good. They were 25th in the nation in terms of scoring defense, you know, and we felt like, you know, they were 55th in the country, 22nd in the country, excuse me, in percentage of points allowed just by their defense. So we know they were really good. But, you know, I mean, they were not even in the top two of the Southeast Conference. Think about that, Femi. And so they did a hell of a job on the Ohio State Buckeyes. So for me, Ryan Day, I think, I don't know if he solved this quarterback issue or he thinks he has, but I think offensively they're going to have to get back to the drawing board and find out where the hell they are.
Yeah, maybe they'll raid the portal for one of these quarterbacks that's still hanging out there in the transfer portal. We know that college football is in the age of free agency. So we'll see what happens when the rosters are complete once we get to spring ball and all that. But we do have a fun NFL game that's happening in Jerry World. Cotton Bowl last night. Tonight, though, main event, Lions at the Cowboys. Dallas right now laying 5.5, total 52.5. We'll obviously ask our guests about this, as well as Matt Eumanns coming up a little bit later on in hour number two. But what are your early thoughts on this Saturday night game where Lions clinched the division last weekend and Dallas looking to get right back in the win column after two straight losses on the road?
Well, I mean, look, the Dallas loss last week, I love how we label the Dallas loss. Well, they can't beat a good team. Come on now. I mean, seriously, the guy makes five field goals, three of them outside of 50 yards, right? I mean, are we really going to blame him on that? You know, I think when you go back and look at this game, they played week 7 of last year, right? And this is before Detroit really kind of got it going. Detroit was turnover prone then. In the first 7 weeks of the season, Detroit was struggling. But Detroit, even were not playing well defensively at this point, and yet they held the Cowboys to 330 yards, right? The Cowboys were only 3 for 9 in the last time they played them on third down. And so they actually, that kind of was the formation of when Detroit started to play better. They turned the ball over 5 times in the game. Mm-hmm. Remember Jared Goff's going in to run for a touchdown and he fumbles? They had 5 fumbles in the game. They lost 3 of them. So for me, you know, I think if you're the Lions, you're sitting there saying, look, we can play with these guys. Goff only threw 5 incomplete passes the whole day. The problem was 2 of those incompletions went to the other team. So if we don't turn this thing over, this is going to be a fourth quarter. We're going to have a chance to win this on a field goal in the game. You know, that line started at 5-6. It went down to 5.5. A lot of money came in on Detroit. It moved down to, I think, almost 4.5. There maybe touched 4 for a moment, and now it's back up to 5.5. So there's money on both sides in this game. I think it's a field goal type game and getting the fourth quarter. Look, we know this about the Cowboys. They got to play from in front.
Yep.
They want to play from in front. And if the Cowboys don't stop Montgomery from running the football, because that's going to be the key. Last year, Jamal Williams had 15 carries for 79 yards in the game. He was effective, you know, controlling the pace of the game. And that's the way you got to play Dallas.
No, I 100% agree with that one there. It's interesting because, like, when I look at this game, from a number standpoint, the people who bet the sixes, it makes sense. Like, 6 to me feels like a little bit too much based on how Dallas's defense has been playing as of late. Like, can they really cover that number? But then again, from a spot standpoint, which is, like, this is more of the sort of the art that goes with the science. From the spot standpoint, it feels like it's a good spot to back Dallas, but the market almost, like, is telling you that it's a good spot to where, like, you're not really getting the value. You're having to pay a little bit of a tax if you want to lay it with the Dallas Cowboys. They're laying 5.5, which is the current number. So it's kind of an interesting game to where, like, one side of me thinks Detroit, another side thinks Dallas, to where, I mean, maybe it's a live betting game, or the total could be a potential, like, the over, I mean, 52.5. I think we might see a lot of points in this game based on how these two defenses
play. I think it's the highest over we've had in almost over a year now, right? And it's ticked down just slightly. So, you know, for me, my question is, everybody thinks Detroit doesn't have as much to play for. I mean, Dallas, just stay as the fifth seed. You're going to get Tampa Bay.
You think that's a vacation? Tampa Bay.
Stay healthy.
maybe stay healthy. And the Lions can still get the one seed, believe it or not. We'll talk to Tim Murray on the other side. We're just getting warmed up here on the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Looking to bet smarter? Then VSiN has the perfect holiday gift for you. Sign up on our holiday special today and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through May 1st for only $79. You're going to get the daily best bets, the exclusive betting splits, the premium analysis, and 24/7 video, plus all of our betting guides and best bets for all college bowl games, the Super Bowl, and March Madness. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up on our holiday special now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, hanging out here on a Saturday, December 30th, final Saturday of 2023. Happy New Year to everybody out there. Hopefully it's a happy and healthy weekend for everyone. And joining us right now to kick off our lineup of guests here is the one and only Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern, as well as the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Tim, hope all is well. I know you were at the Sun Bowl yesterday between Oregon State and Notre Dame there. Runaway for the Fighting Irish there on the sidelines. What were kind of your takeaways there in the bowl game? Sometimes it can be some runaways, as we saw yesterday in El Paso.
Yeah, no, it was fun. It was beautiful, which was nice for someone being on the sidelines there, that we get beautiful sunshine and seen some rain and inclement weather across some of these bowl games. But no, it was a blast. And, you know, my takeaway for, you know, Notre Dame, because I don't really think you could take too much away from Oregon State, completely depleted roster. But, you know, for Notre Dame, a lot of opt-outs, right? The left tackle, Joe Alt, who will be a top 10 pick. Right tackle, Blake Fisher, Sam Hartman, Audric Estime. A lot of pieces in the portal from the wide receiver position. But I think the defense is going to be as strong as ever come next year. Al Golden, unless a defensive coordinator position in the NFL comes open, should be back next year. So I think Notre Dame heading into 2024, especially defensively, guys, should be a team to look out for. Certainly, I think a preseason top 15 type team and a team expected to make the playoff. But impressive performance. And for anyone who had the under, especially early on in the bowl season, like yours truly, that was a rather rough one to swallow as it got over there in the final minute or so. But fun atmosphere, and thankful for the beautiful weather. So didn't have to worry about wearing a parka or any sort of poncho on the sidelines.
Tim, we talk about 2024. Both these teams, Ole Miss and Penn State, are geared up for 2024. You know, their quarterbacks obviously are going to play better than they did last year with another year. Aller specifically with the new offensive coordinator, the coach from Kansas comes in. So talk about this game and what do you expect as both teams seem to be positioning themselves, this game will launch them into next year.
You're 100% right on that, Michael. I mean, this is a momentum-building game, no doubt. Both of these teams have pretty limited opt-outs. You look at Ole Miss, and it won't help them today, but the way that they're attacking the portal, the money they're throwing around to get some players to come in, it feels like they're going for it in Oxford for next year. And you mentioned Koltunicki coming in for Penn State. I thought that was a tremendous hire for James Franklin to tweak that offense. And you think back to, gosh, it might be a decade ago when James Franklin was on the hot seat. He went out and got Joe Moorhead to be his offensive coordinator, and that really helped kind of propel him into some consistency there at Penn State. But as for today, you see the market moving up quite considerably. I know the graphic is showing 4.5. I think we're up to 6 at DraftKings right now. So a lot of movement towards Penn State. This is the one, guys, where I took a bad number. I took some Ole Miss early on in the bowl season. I felt like this was kind of a coin toss type of game, and I felt like the offense from Ole Miss would be able to go punch for punch. I felt like these two teams were rather similar in the sense that, you look at Ole Miss and who they've beaten, and you look at Penn State and who they've beaten and struggled against. Both these teams lost their two biggest games of the year for Ole Miss, Alabama and Georgia, and then for Penn State, losing to Ohio State and Michigan. But lines moving towards Penn State. Do like Ole Miss a little bit here, but for the bowl season, guys, and this game starting in just like a couple hours, this is one of the more intact non-playoff games out there when it comes to opt-outs and transfer portals.
Yeah, this will be a fun game to watch. Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. They're the Peach Bowl between Ole Miss and Penn State. We're hanging out with Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Tim, well, what about the Orange Bowl here to where I think a lot of people are questioning the motivation of Florida State, obviously disappointed not being able to make it to the CFP after an undefeated season. Right now, Georgia's a 21-point favorite. The total is at 46. Is there any number where you'd want to back the Seminoles in this spot here, or is this kind of like a runaway for the Bulldogs?
I think if you want to back the Seminoles, let's see what they look like in game. I think the line is telling you it should be a runaway. The surprising aspect to add to all the opt-outs for the NFL draft on the Florida State side is that Tate Rodemaker, the backup quarterback, hit the portal and he's not going to play. So it's back to Brock Glenn, who we saw in the ACC championship when Florida State was really inept offensively, but the defense held him up in that game to get that victory. But that was the game we all decided we don't want to see this Florida State team in the playoff when Brock Glenn was a quarterback, and he will be playing quarterback today. I mean, to go through the list of opt-outs, Johnny Wilson, Keon Coleman, two best wide receivers, they're out. Jaheim Bell, tight end, he's out. Trey Benson, he's out. Jared Verse, Fabian Lovett on the defensive line, both out. Akeem Dent, safety, gone. A pair of cornerbacks, gone. And for Florida State, while Georgia is no doubt disappointed, Florida State, I don't know how they prepared for this game, to be honest, guys. I mean, this to me just feels like, why are we here? They went undefeated. They're catching 21 in the Orange Bowl. They have nobody on their roster who probably is interested. So, if you want to get involved in this game personally, I would look at some team totals. Do you look at team total under, I think DraftKings is around like 11.5, 10.5, somewhere in that double digit ballpark for Florida State. That would be the angle I would attack. I have a hard time envisioning, guys, how Florida State scores points here tonight. Now the total has started to tick up a little bit. I think you're going up to 46. And I think that might be more so because Georgia, the belief will be that they're going to be able to score some points. They have some opt-outs, no doubt. Brock Bowers is not playing. Mims, the tackle, is not playing. There's some guys in the portal, but you look at, the quarterback and Carson Beck, he's coming back next year. I think there's some motivation there for Georgia to put it on Florida State. So I don't know how Florida State scores today, guys. So if anything pre-flop, I would look at a team total under for the Noles.
And it sounds like Georgia wants to play this one. Like, it sounds like Georgia's going to be interested, too. You can listen to Kirby talk and listen to his players. Like, I'm surprised the line hasn't even gone further than 21, Tim, just based on the outlay that you had in that game. The other line that's moving is Auburn, Maryland. Auburn opened up as a two-point favorite. Now they're pretty much 4.5, fives in some shop. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, this is one where maybe it was an overreaction to the decision of Talia Tagovailoa, which is kind of unique, where he's trying to get another year of eligibility. He needs to get a waiver from, I think, both Alabama and Maryland because he played a fifth game, I want to say. But he's not playing in this game, the starting quarterback for Maryland. And we saw this line when that news came out, jumped to 7 and kind of hung out there for a while. And now I think you're starting to see the buyback, as you alluded to, Michael, where this thing has jumped down to 5. You know, for Auburn, they're a team that was able to run the ball with relative success in that, you know, Iron Bowl game. You know, is there still an Iron Bowl hangover? I wouldn't think so. I would think they would be over that just gutting loss to end the regular season here. For Maryland, they've played well in bowl games under Mike Loxley. And, you know, I think the line, guys, is coming down because Billy Edwards Jr. is going to be the starting quarterback for Maryland. And I think there's an overall belief that, well, there's a drop-off from Talia to Billy Edwards Jr. I don't know if it's that big of a drop-off. So I think that's why you're starting to see the buyback here on Maryland. Not, you know, for me, a game that I grabbed some money line prices when the rumors were out there that Talia would sit out, but right now, not a game I necessarily want to get involved in. I just don't trust this Auburn team to win by margin. So, you know, that's why I think we're seeing this steam come in on Maryland, because Billy Edwards Jr., while he didn't have a ton of snaps this year, athletic quarterback, and I think there's some folks that believe that he could keep things competitive today.
We encourage everybody to check out the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast to get Tim's full thoughts on the CFP coming up on Monday. But Tim, we got about 40 seconds left. Is it possible we have two unpopular favorites in Michigan and Texas come Monday?
Yeah, I think so, Femi, for sure. You know, Michigan is a team that is not really being bet all that much. If you look at betting splits and other reporting out there from different books across the country, you know, I talked about on the podcast, I haven't bet it yet, because I'm waiting to see where this goes on game day. But I think I'm going to grab the cheapest money line price when it pops on Michigan. I think they're going to be able to run the ball with success against Alabama. We've talked about it already with you guys. I did play the under in this one, Alabama and Michigan. And then I think the same thing. I haven't bet Texas Washington yet. We'll see where this goes. But it does feel like heading into New Year's Day, guys, two very popular underdogs, which is very rare, no doubt.
Yeah, right now that Texas line is down to 3.5 against Washington. It was 4.5 earlier in the week. He is Tim Murray. Check him out on VSiN Primetime and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Tim, we thank you for joining us here, and good luck with all the bets this weekend.
Happy New Year, guys.
All right, Stormy thank joins you, us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you're looking for a betting edge this college bowl season, the VSiN experts have you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber with an introductory offer of only $9.99. VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests. You'll also get the betting splits, and you'll get picks for every single bowl game with our college bowl betting guide. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to sign up for only $9.99. To become part of the Sports Betting Network. That's VSIN/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. We're on the DraftKings Network. And joining us now, you see her Sunday through Thursday here on the Lombardi Line. And you will see her Monday afternoon patrolling the sidelines in Phoenix for the Fiesta Bowl between Liberty and Oregon. The one and only Stormy Bonantoni here joining us on the Lombardi Line. Stormy, we appreciate you waking up with us. And we'll start with the game that you're doing, Liberty-Oregon. Obviously, kind of an unorthodox matchup here with the bowl season, but you've spoken with both teams. What have you heard, and how do you kind of see this matchup playing out?
Yeah, definitely. I talked to a lot of players yesterday. Bo Nix, it was great to see how the entire team really rallied around him announcing that he was going to play. He said that there was never a doubt in his mind that he was going to go ahead and start this game. And it seems like a lot of his fellow teammates and stars followed suit. Bucky Irving's playing, Tez Johnson, Brandon Dorlus on defense. A lot of those guys are pretty ticked off that they didn't win the Pac-12 championship and are in this situation, but they want to end the year on a high note. And yeah, they are going to be missing some key people. Troy Franklin's their top wide receiver. Their starting center, who was the best center in all of college football, won the Remington this year. He's not going to be available. But overall, it seems like they're a really, really motivated group. And they're obviously a very big favorite in this game. As you see that 16.5 on your screen, it's actually down a little bit from 18.5. So Liberty's gotten some love. And it was funny hearing from Liberty head coach Jamie Chadwell, who said after the plane landed here in Phoenix that somebody gave them a 1% chance, which reminded him of the movie Dumb and Dumber. He said, one in a million, huh? So you're telling me there's a chance. So, you know, they are certainly a group that despite the big spread and despite being called underdogs, which they are in large fashion, very, very motivated. They're not counting themselves out and they're going to play as hard as humanly possible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think, you know, I think Oregon, because they lost twice to Washington, I don't think Washington gets enough respect for beating a really, really good Oregon team twice. You know, Stormy, I think to me, Washington, yeah, they beat them and okay, you know, they made a field goal late. And then the second game, they were 13-point dog in that game and they won outright. I think this Oregon team is really talented. And I would be shocked if they didn't play some of their best football of the year this year.
No, I'm with you. They, like I said, they're really motivated. And when you think about Bo Nix and like his career arc and the way that things didn't work out for him at Auburn to transfer to Oregon and turn into this guy who's a Heisman Trophy finalist. He had 40 touchdowns and just 3 interceptions this year. He leads the league in completion percentage. He's the operator of what's going to make this offense go. And he wants to go out on a high note. Those games against Washington were tough. It left a bad taste in a lot of those guys' mouths. And this game is important to them. I know it doesn't seem that way. I know a lot of people say they're probably not particularly motivated coming into a game against Liberty, who a lot of people are even questioning how and why they're in the game versus SMU, given the strength of schedule that this Liberty team played. But Oregon wants to be here. They're looking forward to it. And I'm talking to Dan Lanning and their coaching staff a little bit later on this afternoon and excited to learn a little bit more about where they're at.
We're speaking with Stormy Bonantoni here, VSiN host of the Lombardi Line Sunday through Thursday. Also, ESPN college football sideline reporter. You'll see here on the sidelines Monday afternoon for Liberty and Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl. Well, Stormy, Michael mentioned it. The team that beat Oregon twice, the Washington Huskies, they're in the Sugar Bowl in the CFP semifinals taking on Texas. Seems like there's a lot of interest here on Washington. Right now, the line is down to 3.5, total 63.5. Is that how you're seeing this here, or could Texas maybe be a little bit undervalued in this matchup?
So I hate it. I'm so like-minded with a lot of people coming into some of these games. But yeah, I do. I lean Washington in this spot. It's hard not to, based on everything that we've seen down the stretch from this Huskies team and like finding ways to win, the things that Michael Penix Jr. has been able to do. I do get kind of a feeling this could be a shootout. Obviously, we have a high total in this one, 63.5, two high-powered offenses that I could see going blow for blow, especially given the fact that on the back end for both teams, we also have two young secondaries. So I don't have a firm bet in this game, but I do lean toward the Huskies and a high scoring one potentially too.
Yeah, I do too. I just, for some reason, I think Washington's always disrespected, you know, because they played so many close games and won down the stretch. Everybody was ready to write them off, and then they beat Oregon. And no, wait a minute, we can't write them off. We got to put them in this thing. You know, everybody had them going the Oregon route, having to play in the Fiesta Bowl. Where are you on the Alabama-Michigan game? My concern is Michigan, number one defense in the nation, you know, total defense, they're number two. They play really well. But when they play against a quarterback that has movement, like Tua's brother at Maryland, they seem to struggle a little bit more. And I wonder if Milroe will be the X factor in the game.
Yeah, and it does seem like with Jalen Milroe, they've kind of given him a little extra like rein, right, to move around and cut him loose a little bit. I agree with you from that standpoint. It's hard not to love Saban as an underdog with a month to prepare too. Like historically speaking, we've seen Harbaugh teams play worse after time off, and Alabama teams play better. Harbaugh's 1-6 in bowls, 0-2 in the playoff, hasn't proven it on this stage yet, and this Alabama team is so different from where they were at the start of the season when, you know, just talking about Texas, losing to Texas in week two, Milroe benched in week three, that narrow win over USF. Like, he has looked like a different guy. The memory is forever going to stick with all of us when he hits Isaiah Bond on that fourth and goal from the 31 to beat Auburn, how he played against LSU, how he beat top-ranked Georgia for that SEC title. And I don't know if you guys saw the media availability of him yesterday. He's been going all over the place about the chip on his shoulder he has about people telling him that he couldn't play quarterback, his former OC Bill O'Brien included. So I think he's really, really motivated. And to the other side of the ball, too, this is a defense I don't think that Michigan has really seen the likes of this year. So I like a lot of things Alabama, which scares me because, again, I think everybody seems to like Alabama getting 2 points.
I mean, how could you not? Saban, we saw it on game day, the stats, 6-2 outright as an underdog since 2008. I don't know what's more impressive, the 6-2 or the fact that he's only been a dog 8 times in 15 years. That's pretty good stuff there from Bama. How about the Citrus Bowl, though, between Iowa and Tennessee here? Right now, the Vols, 6-point favorites, total 35. Joe Milton opted out. It's going to be the freshman that's going to make his first start against his Iowa defense. How do you see this one playing out?
I don't have any feel for that game at all, to be honest with you. That's one that I kind of like checked off of my board, I guess. I mean, I feel confident, fairly confident that in that spot, Tennessee's going to win the game. But as far as the six goes, I don't really have a strong feeling on it. I'm actually curious your thought while we're talking Citrus about the Orange Bowl. I'm curious your opinion on that one with Georgia now up to 20 points that they're laying against Florida State. Like, I get all of the opt-outs and everything, which we can certainly discuss here. I don't have a bet on this game either, but like, I'm not taking the points. I can tell you that much with Florida State. It's crazy. Like, I don't know what to do with this game.
I think it's going to keep going up. I think you take Georgia just knowing they're going to kill them, right?
I guess I was trying to go through the rosters earlier this morning, and you just look at all of the players that aren't available for Florida State. You're not going to have Jordan Travis. You're not going to have your backup quarterback in Tate Rodemaker. So it's Brock Glenn, who started the ACC championship. No Trey Benson, who led you in rushing yards and total touchdowns. None of your top three wide receivers. No Jared Verse on defense, who's going to be a first round pick, or your starting corners or your safety. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. And now we see on the screen, it's up to 21. It just keeps on going. So people feel comfortable laying it with the dogs. It's just such a big number. I don't think that I can get there, but at the same point, who's going to play for Florida State?
Yeah, I think this is an in-game festivity for me here with Georgia and Florida State. I don't think I could ever take that 21 based on all the opt-outs. Stormy, we've got about a minute left here. Peach Bowl, Ole Miss, Penn State, that's kicking off at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Looks like we're getting some late Ole Miss buyback. We're down to 5.5 in a couple of spots here, total 53.
Yeah, so I love Ole Miss in this spot. I like them to win on the money line, and I'm a little bit confused why this number keeps on going up because I don't see it personally. The Rebels have a dynamic offense, 15 in the country. Penn State, yes, a great defense, but I give Jackson Dart and Ole Miss the edge here with the Nittany Lions defensive coordinator Manny Diaz moving on to take that head coaching job at Duke. I think that could lead to some miscommunication against an effective dual threat quarterback. And I mean, and Ole Miss seems motivated too. Penn State's got a couple opt-outs. I feel like it's an Ole Miss money line play. I love the six. So I'm confused why this number is going the other way.
Plus no one teaser seven. This week, Stormy? No teaser this week?
Oh, can I tempt you in a college football teaser? Can we get Alabama +8? Can we throw that in there? Can we throw that in there?
What are you there teasing? What are you teasing it with?
I knew you'd have it. I knew you'd have one up your sleeve.
We do have to find a dance partner. What would I like? What would I like? That we're cutting down on time here. Maybe Miami, keep bumping them up against the Ravens. I don't know.
There you go.
It can be the Tua teaser with Alabama and Miami. We can go ahead and get that. Stormy, have fun on the game tonight, Stormy. We'll talk to you later. This week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly, and they will get the NBA League Pass for the rest of the season. What a deal this is. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. That's DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Man, you get a League Pass? All you got to do is make a $5 bet? It's a great deal.
Hell of a deal.
It is a hell of
hell
a deal.
Hell of a deal.
It's a fantastic deal. This is the Lombardi Line here. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Femi Ebbefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas on December 30th here on this Saturday, final Saturday of 2023. And this Russell Wilson story, Michael, has really taken off here. And our guy, Jordan Schultz, the NFL insider at Bleacher Report, was first on the scene, was able to report all the financials and the nitty-gritty here. And Jordan Schultz will be joining us right now here on the Lombardi Line here. Jordan, obviously the Russell Wilson story with Denver, Russ being benched for the final 2 weeks of the regular season. I guess my question to you to spin it forward is, what's the future like at the quarterback position for Denver? And what's the future for Russell Wilson as we spin it forward to 2024?
I would say for Denver, they have to evaluate everything. We know Sean Payton does not like rookie quarterbacks. You know, we also know that they gave Jared Stidham 2 years, $10 million. So really a cheap flyer, and we'll get a look at him over the next couple of weeks. But I think they're going to have to take a really long look this offseason at what it is they want to accomplish. You know, I'm not talking about winning a Super Bowl or contending. I'm talking about what type of offense they want to run, because, you know, one of the issues that came about this season was that Sean Payton and Russell Wilson over the last couple weeks, and really I would say for most of the season, seemingly were not on the same page. Now, Russ put together quite a good year, you know, statistically, 3,100 yards, 26 touchdowns, 8 picks. But we see how frustrated Sean Payton was. And to me, listen, I'm just talking about strictly as a football fan, I was frustrated because I felt like Russell was giving him everything he had, and they put together a nice 5-game win streak. They beat Kansas City and they go into the bye. And then all of a sudden we learn about this threat. And to me, it's very likely that Russell Wilson moves on. I think he'll have a good list of suitors, but I think the bigger picture is what Sean Payton wants in a quarterback, because, you know, he's going to have to make a really good decision with his next quarterback.
Yeah, and he's going to have cap problems, Jordan, as we know about it. I mean, the Russell Wilson can leave Denver, but the damage of this trade, which makes this trade one of the worst in NFL history, because, you know, look, teams have made mistakes in trade, but when you add the implication of the cap number and the ongoing cost that was incurred, that even when Wilson leaves the building, they have a hard time coming up with it. So, you know, he's going to have to get comfortable with Stidham. My sense of this is Russell would never run the offense. It's the same thing that we heard in Seattle. Let Russ cook. Well, Russ wants to do something that somebody else doesn't want to do, and it seems to cause some problems and seems to cause a lot of issues. Are you sure he's going to have a lot of suitors out there? Because for me, will he take less than $40 million? Because the one thing we do know, as well as he played this year, he's not a $48.5 million quarterback a year. What is his tolerance on what will he play for?
That's a great question, and I haven't asked that yet, because I still think he has to get through these next couple of weeks. He has to, you know, he said he's going to mentor Stidham. He's an $85 million dead cap hit on Denver, so you're right about the cap for them. The reason I say he'll have suitors is because is money, like, how motivating is money now in terms of his next deal? I mean, he's got, you know, one of the most lucrative contracts ever from Denver. So if you look around the league, Mike, at teams that could be looking for a quarterback next season, you know, maybe it's in Atlanta, you know, Vegas, New England, you know, there's plenty of teams that are going to need a quarterback, and obviously the draft will happen. But I think that there will be teams. It's just he needs to go play for a coordinator that's going to give him the freedom to be deliberate with how he wants to run his offense. And you mentioned some of the issues they had in Seattle with Schottenheimer and obviously Pete, and then this year with Sean Payton. To me, the type of personality that Russell needs as an OC is someone that's going to bend and give him more freedom. And I don't, you know, one of the criticisms that you've heard from some media has been that this year Russell was running a very basic offense. I would ask you, I don't know, is that accurate? Was he not?
Oh yeah, that's completely accurate. He was running day one, but see, everybody has that same line. You got to let Russ cook. Russ hasn't been good in 3 years. Like, the reality of this thing is Russ, the value of Russ's contract didn't meet the value of his play. Even when they were on the 5-game win streak, they were winning because of their defense was turning the ball over and they were running the football. I mean, there was a time in the betting world where you never wanted to play Russell in a 3-point game because he would always find a way to beat you. But, you know, last week in Denver, home, minute 15 to go in the game, they can't make a play. And they punt it back to Bailey Zappi and they lose the game. I actually think Sean gave this more rope than I anticipated. I thought this would end in week 6, week 7, just because of the same thing that everybody – well, Russ needs somebody to let him cook. Well, he can't cook anymore. He's not even at the diner. He's working. He's making pancakes for the kids in the morning. I mean, that's what he's cooking. So it's
They were asking, so my big issue, though, is that whether or not you think Russ is a guy anymore, the frustrating part for me is that they come to him, you know, hanging this threat over his head if he doesn't defer his salary or his injury guarantee at $37 million, and say, listen, if you don't do this, we're going to make you inactive. We're going to bench you for the rest of the year. Mike, it's just not how you operate a business.
I couldn't agree with you more. Look, there's just no way. Like, if Sean would have said to me, go talk to the agent and tell him we want the injury guarantees taken away, there's just no – I would have said to Sean, look, think about it from his viewpoint. He's 35 years old. He's not going to give us that. Like, we don't have to threaten him with it. We just have to do it. Like, if you want to bench him, bench him. But we're never – why would the kid give away his injury guarantees? Why would he acquiesce to that? There's no way. No. If I were representing him, and I don't think he's playing well, I would never give away the guarantees. Now, I might lower my salary. I might do something to help the team. But I'm not giving away the one thing that I signed for to protect me as I grow older.
Of course. Think about this. You throw the 3 touchdowns against the Chiefs. You finally feel like you have some momentum. You know, potential Hall of Fame quarterback. You're sitting on your couch or in the facility, whatever. And they come to you and they tell you, this is what we need you to do. I mean, it's just a crazy request. It's crazy. And, you know, he said, I don't want to defer it because it's a physical game. And then you hear fans criticize him. Well, what would happen if there was an Alex Smith situation or he tore up his knee or whatever? It's just, I can't imagine any quarterback, especially one of that caliber, saying, I'm going to acquiesce to this, to your point, for $37 million and defer it down the road. It's just not something that you do. Now, the question about Russ being, can he cook? I mean, is he still not a top 12 to 15 quarterback?
I don't see it, Jordan. I don't. I think he's a game. You got to. He can't carry the team. He can't. He's one look. He's going to try to make a second play. He has an urgency to get out of the pocket in a hurry. Remember, he's still an undersized quarterback, so he has trouble seeing down the field. Look, he's 27th in the National Football League in yards per attempt passing. They can't make an explosive play. And I think the frustration is that he won't just take the profits. It's what's going on in Kansas City. Kansas City is, you know, Mahomes keeps wanting to try to make explosive plays down the field. Do you realize Desmond Ridder has 18 passes of over 20 yards? Mahomes only has 15. He's not even the top 20 of 20-yard passes down the field because they can't. They don't have any juice. They have no separation. And so I think you got to accept who you are at this point in your career. Look, I agree with the kid. I wouldn't take away the guarantees. I wouldn't. But there's no way you're $48 million. You don't move the line. That's why I don't understand how this line moved from 6 to 3.5. Stidham will go in there and execute the offense.
I think the expectation, though, is that with a new quarterback who hasn't played, it's going to be more conservative. I don't know. I guess I'm not. To me, Stidham, you know, he had that one great game with the Raiders against the Niners, and then everyone thought maybe he's a guy. I don't know. I really don't. He was a huge recruit. He had, you know, a pretty decent college career. I have no idea if he's going to be a good starting quarterback in this league. But what I do know is, given how cheap his deal is, 2 years, $10 million, Denver is going to have to find another solution. Sean's not going to go in the next season with Jarrett Stidham as his quarterback, and I can't imagine Russ is going to be back. So they're facing a lot of obstacles. You mentioned the cap. There's certainly pressure on George Payton, the GM. But Sean's running the show. Make no mistake that, you know, they're working collaboratively, but Sean has all the juice in that building, and he probably should.
Is George Payton going to keep his job, Jordan?
I think it's 50-50, but there's a lot of pressure there. Let's see the next couple of weeks. Maybe they can get a little something going.
There you go. Fantastic stuff there from Jordan Schultz, NFL insider at Bleacher
Thanks,
Report.
Jordan,
we appreciate it, man.
My pleasure, fellas.
Awesome stuff. We begin hour number two coming up next here on the DraftKings Network.